For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
So we got to back up a little bit here, back to Numbers 11. This is before the failure of the people to enter the promised land. They've come out of Egypt. They've been following Moses. They've had the failure with the golden calf. And they're wandering around. They're getting their bearings. They're months probably removed from the escape from Egypt. And Moses is getting a real good crash course in an upper-level spiritual leadership. Let's start in Numbers 11, verses 4 through 6. It says that the rabble who were among them had greedy desires, and also the sons of Israel wept again and said, "Who will give us meat to eat? We remember the fish which we used to eat in Egypt." And it's amazing, you know, you think about the human capacity to romanticize the past. Here they are, you know, just recently removed from 400 years of oppression and slavery, where they experienced the killing of their firstborn sons, and they're getting tired of eating the manna, and they're remembering slavery in Egypt as the time when they got to eat meat for free. It never surprises me, actually it always amazes me, how people are able to look back at the events of the past and see them in a positive light, when especially it compares with their present. And so they're doing this and they're thinking about this and they're saying the cucumbers and the melons and the leeks and the onions and the garlic. But now our appetite is gone. There's nothing at all to look at except this magical food that God gives us that appears on the ground every day and meets every one of our nutritional needs. Oh, but the garlic and the leeks. So Moses heard the people weeping throughout their families, each man in the doorway of his tent. And the anger of the Lord was greatly kindled, and Moses was displeased. So Moses said to the Lord, "Why have you been so hard on your servant? And why have I not found favor in your sight, that you have laid the burden of all this people on me? Was it I who conceived this people? Was it I who brought them forth, that you should say to me, 'Carry them in your bosom as a nurse who carries a nursing infant to the land which you swore to their fathers?'" You see, Moses is really very relationally close to the Lord. He's connecting with him. He's speaking to him as a man speaks to his friend face to face. They talk, they relate. He's learning about God. He's drawing near to God. But he's got this burden of leadership with the people. And he's becoming very exasperated with them. It's hard to be the one that the people look to. It's hard to be in that position. He feels like he's babysitting a bunch of ungrateful children. Every turn is questioned. When he went into Egypt to rescue the people, they questioned, "Who are you and what gives you the right to speak to us?" Pharaoh doubled their workload and they blamed Moses. He leads them out of that 400 years of slavery, gains their freedom. God does all these miracles. He goes up on the mountain to speak to the Lord, comes down with the commandments, and the people have already gone astray. He's reached the end of his rope. He is fed up with the lack of gratitude, the lack of appreciation, and the lack of help that he has in trying to lead these people. I wonder what value this has for the servant team. What could we draw from this passage as a group of home group leaders that might help us? What does the Lord have for us on this? He's experiencing the burden of leadership. It is not an easy job. It's hard to stand in the place as God's representative to people. It's hard to fight that battle, to want to see the purposes of God accomplished in a world system that is created by the diabolical mind of Satan to keep people from following after God, to stand up and to stand against that, to love God and to love God's people is hard. These people don't want to be led. They want to do what's right in their own eyes, and they are ungrateful for what they've been given, and they romanticize the past, even when we're talking about slavery. What home church leader can't relate to that? I don't think I've ever met a home church leader. I've certainly had that experience where there have been those times where you're like, God, why are we doing this? Why am I here? How is it that this is good? This is hard. People don't want me to be here. I don't want to be here. I feel like, you know, this could be somebody else's job. Why is this my responsibility? It's so easy to go down that road, but it's a fleshly perspective. It's a horizontal view of leadership. Why are these people my responsibility? Why do I have to be the one to take care of them? These people are impossible to love. They will not listen. They don't even know. They claim to believe, but I look at their lives and I look at what they're doing and I could just tell. They're giving me lip service. I don't deserve to be treated this way. Why should they look at me and why should I put up with the grumbling and the cries of the people? God, this burden of leadership you put on me is a judgment and a curse. You felt that way. And so have I. Because when you're in that role of leadership, your flesh wants to convince you that it all is up to you. You're alone on an island and your group, your ministry will sink and swim on the basis of your performance. And our flesh loves to hear that. Because at the heart of that is, you're so important. If you don't succeed, the whole world's going to come crumbling down. Yeah. My flesh likes that. Check out what Moses says here. He goes on in 13 through 15. Where am I to get meat to give all his people? For they weep before me, saying, give us meat that we may eat. I alone am not able to carry all this the burden of all these people because it's too burdensome for me. So, Lord, if you're going to deal thusly with me, please kill me at once. If I have found favor in your sight, do not let me see my own wretchedness. Have you been there? I bet you have. Kill me, God, Moses says. Then let me continue in this cursed leadership position. And he's got a very horizontal perspective. Right? It all depends on him. I would rather die than continue on in this role. And with this perspective, the people are the problem. God's goodness is in question, and the burden is too great. See, Moses' key problem here is that he thinks it all depends on him. He's convinced, where am I going to get this meat? There's hundreds of thousands. A million strong people that are involved here. How am I going to feed them? How can I do this? They're complaining to me. They're sick of the manna. They want meat. Who am I? How am I going to meet their needs? And the burden is too great because it's not Moses' burden to bear. That's his problem. He thinks it all depends on him, but it is the Lord's burden. This is leadership in the flesh. This is what we do when we look at our incredible role, the incredible opportunity that each and every one of us has been given to play a role in God's plan to rescue the human race from hell. And we shake our fist at him and say, I can't do it. We're right. We can't do it. We're not supposed to do it. And God's answer here is amazing. We need to really look at what God's response here is to Moses. And I think it starts with, let's consider what God doesn't say. What he doesn't say is, Moses, haven't we been through this? Am I not sufficient for you? I'm the all-powerful creator God of the universe. And I'm right here with you. What's your problem, man? Why don't you wake up, Moses? Why don't you toughen up? Be a man. And just understand that I'm here and I'm part of the program here, pal. He doesn't do that. What else he doesn't do? He doesn't say, quit your whining. So what if they want meat? We're not going to give them meat. They got manna. Who cares? And he doesn't say, you think you got it rough? Try being their God for an afternoon. Right? You should try this rollout, pal. He doesn't do any of those things. He does something remarkable, unexpected, and surprising. It says in 16, it says, the Lord therefore said to Moses, gather for me 70 men from the elders of Israel, whom you know to be the elders of the people and their officers, and bring them to the tent of meeting, and let them take their stand with you there. Then I will come down and speak with you there, and I will take the Spirit who is upon you, and will put him upon them. And they shall bear the burden of the people with you, so that you will not bear it alone. Wow. God's perspective is so different than Moses's. And this is different from the event earlier, and we read about in Exodus 13, where Jethro comes along and they appoint elders because they're gathering from the elders that they want. This is not an administrative division of the people. This is a spiritual sharing of the burden of leadership. Of all those elders you selected before, pick the best ones, and I will take the Spirit that is upon you and I will put it on them. And we will have a community of leaders bearing the burden of people together. God's answer is, Moses, these people, this rabble of ingrates, this rebellious, stiff-necked people that you would like me to kill you over rather than allow you to continue to lead them, they are the answer to your problem. He takes Moses's horizontal, fleshly, selfish, self-centered perspective on his situation, and he turns it into a vertical answer. You cannot do this alone, but you are trying, and it is killing you. Moses, what you need is people. See, leadership in the flesh says, believes that the people are the problem. But God's perspective, God's way in leadership, believes in the power of God to work through people. That it's together as a community that we're going to accomplish the mission of God, the impossible mission of God. It's going to happen as we depend on Him, we depend on His Word, we lean on Him for strength and understanding, and as we trust and share the burden together as the sons and daughters of God. How are you doing at sharing the burden of leadership with others? I'm greatly concerned for you, Zenos. I'm greatly concerned as I've been in the sphere leadership role, meeting more and more and having the privilege of working more and more with home group leaders, people who have been stalwart servants in this church for 40 years, some of the most remarkable, dedicated, hardworking people that I've met. So many of you in this room, I think, are on an island. You're trying to do this work without the support, without the provision of people to share that burden with you, the way that God intended. And I'm afraid that a big part of the reason that you are alone, the reason that you're out there on an island, is because you are not prioritizing. You are not choosing to take advantage of God's provision for you. In most cases, it's not because it's not there, but because it's deemed, for whatever reason, for probably a whole host of reasons, as unnecessary. And so what I want to do is I want to talk to you for a moment about three areas where you can find support. Three areas where you can look this weekend to share the burden of leadership as God intended. Your spouse, your co-leader, and your sphere team. Those are three key provisions that God has provided for you. Because you are not supposed to be on an island. It does not all depend on you. And if you're out there trying to do it on your own, it's killing you. Let's talk about your spouse. How do you see your spouse? There's probably a horizontal perspective of that and a vertical perspective of that as well, right? Is your spouse a millstone around your neck? You know, you come home, you've got stuff to do, you've got to teach home church tonight, you've got a disciple to meet with, you've got your career, you've got your responsibilities, you've got all these things that you're trying to do, and he or she is just trying to add to your to-do list, just trying to make you do more, things that don't matter, becoming a weight and a burden on your shoulders. And you're just wishing, man, I just got to get away from this person. I just can't deal with this right now. I've got to go out and I've got to do the Lord's work. You're no help to me right now. And we all probably have those fleshly moments, but are you there on a regular basis? If you're here, it's because you and your spouse have something to offer. You've been equipped, you've been trained, you are experienced, and you are not a millstone around someone's neck. You're a badass warrior for God. That's my wife. And I got to tell you, I learned this from her. My wife is a badass warrior for God. If I were to go into battle and I could pick one person to go with me, one person to have my back that I know is going to be swinging their sword harder than I am, it's her. Do you want to disappoint someone who looks like that? I come home, I'm in the flesh, and she's like, what's going on? Let's go, come on. Spurring me on to love and good deeds. And that's exactly what we need to be for our spouses. Somebody who is creating a dynamic in the home where our home is a fortress where we can go get rest and equipped and trained and spurred on and connected, and we can go together back out into the battle because we are fighting an impossible mission. One that cannot be done without the power of God and the help of others. Your spouse is your best comrade. Your right-hand man, your right-hand woman who can be there for you, encouraging you, helping you, challenging you, rebuking you, and keeping you on mission. That's God's provision for all of us who are married. We have this opportunity. And the ethos of your home can either make you or break you as a leader. We have such an important opportunity to build that fortress together and to fight for what really matters. And we spend so much time and so much energy fighting about stupid things, about chores and money and minor parenting differences. We fight on those things and we exasperate ourselves. We expend so much of our relational capital with our spouses fighting about worldly things when it comes time to take a real stand with each other on something that really matters in eternity. We feel like, well, I gotta be careful. I don't want to start too many fights. We're not really doing that well right now. And this issue, yeah, it's spiritual and it's important, but I'm going to have to take it on down the road because we just got in this big fight about getting the garbage out on time. Let's not do that. Let's save our battles for the things that really matter. Proverbs 18:22 says, "The man who finds a wife finds a treasure, that he receives favor from the Lord." Your spouse can be that comrade in arms, that warrior who can help move you forward, lifting each other up, praying together, confiding in one another, lying in bed, heads on pillows, talking about what's going on in your ministry, praying together for your disciples, talking about what is our next move, talking about what you've read in the Word of God lately, sharing with one another, building one another up, spurring one another on to love and good deeds. I've been doing adult ministry for 8 years. And one of the first things I did when I came up out of the college group was I started looking, okay, what's different? And what are the different things, the wineskins that don't carry over, the methods that don't carry over? And what are the areas where we can create new wineskins and do new things? And one of the things I lamented the most was the power of the ministry house as a wineskin. Because the ministry house is so awesome because you're all there, you're all committed to the same vision, you're committed to the same purpose, and you get up in the morning and you come downstairs and there's a guy getting in the Word and you're like, crap, I gotta get in my Word too. I don't want to look unspiritual, right? You know, home church is at your house, so it's like more effort to skip home church than it is to stay. All your friends are going to prayer tonight, so I mean, you go to prayer. I mean, there is a gravity that pulls you towards the things of God that is created by that dynamic. And I was like, Lord, how can we do this? We can't have adult ministry houses. I mean, that would finally be over the line for us. You know, that just then at some point, and God has been speaking to me on this lately, and He said, the home, a marriage can create that environment. A husband and a wife with their children can create an ethos, can create an environment that's 10 times that of a ministry house. Because a family pulling together for the things of the Lord is an unstoppable force. And is that what we do for each other? Is that what our family's like? Where you come downstairs and you're like, oh, I got to get in the Word. My wife's in the Word. You know, are we just encouraging one another, moving one another? And our children, are they getting wrapped up in it? Are they getting sucked up into the spiritual dynamism between you and your spouse? Are they being raised in a home where the Lord and the things of the Lord are what really matters and what we're really focused on? That has a power and an ability to lift all of us up and to make us love what it is that we do, to love the life that we have, to love the opportunities. It doesn't change our circumstances at all. People are still hard to lead. And stubborn and stiff-necked and ungrateful. But me and my spouse, we can do this with the Lord and together. That's a vision that we can attain. I was thinking about the college adult transition, and you know, I think the whole thing, you know, has been going better, but I've got a great new marketing campaign come to adult ministry where you get to sleep with your roommate. And it's not sin. We've been going about this transition all wrong. How's that for a vision? What about your co-leader? Are you making time? You know, one of the things I went around and I polled all of our sphere leaders, and especially in the adult ministry, and they were saying, you know, it's probably half of our co-leaders don't have regular time outside of leaders' meetings with their counterparts. Meaning, you know, if you're a male home church leader, there should be another male home church leader in your group, and that you don't have regular time with them to pray together, to relate together, to talk, to help one another. And I think that's a drastic mistake. I think that's a serious error. What is the point of plurality of leadership if you are not in there with each other? You need each other. You need to share the burdens of what's happening. You need to talk about what's going on with your disciple. Your co-leader is a key provision from the Lord. Who are you talking to about your marriage? Who are you talking to about what's going on with your kids? Who are you talking to about the temptations that you're facing? God has provided for you, I hope, a key relationship where you can connect and be there for one another, keeping your edge sharp. This is God's provision for you. And the answer that so many say is, I don't have time for that. If that's the case, your priorities are messed up. I know that you've got families and careers and disciples. And I know that you're working hard. But your co-leader is worth it. The relationship that you have there is needed to share the burden of leadership, and you are God's provision for them. It's not just that you need them, but it's that they need you. And you have got to find a way, because Satan is hard at work to put you on an island. To disconnect you from your spouse, to disconnect you from your co-leader, so that he can get you alone and tear you apart. And those are the two best places that you have to share the burden of leadership. How about your sphere staff? How do you see the pastoral staff in your sphere? I sometimes, you know, I walk around and I see home group leaders and I'm like, hey man, how's it going? We should get together. And they're like, it's the eye of Sauron. You know? Are you discipling? You know? I see you. You know, and I mean, it's kind of lonely. You know, you're like, hey, these are people I've known for years. Best, some of my best friends, you know. And I'm like, we should get together. And they're like, why? Because we love each other, remember? That sounds dangerous. We are here to get your backs. We love you, Xenos. We want to see you succeed. We want to lift you up. We know that it's hard. We know that it's burdensome. And we want to share that burden with you. We want to come alongside. We want to help you. We want to encourage you. This work is hard, and Satan wants to take you out. I was having lunch with my buddy Dave Durrell the other day, and I was complaining about the burden of leadership. About some of you. I sounded a lot like Moses. And he was like, you know, Dave's normally a very, very mild-mannered dude. And all of a sudden, he got this fire in his eyes, you know. And he was like, Ryan, this is hard work. Satan is a fearsome enemy. Of course this is going to be hard. We aren't playing T-ball here. And I was just like, yeah! This isn't T-ball! And it's true. What we're doing is hard, and we need to lift each other up. Being anti-authority is not God's way. Remember Fonzie? Fonzie was so cool. 19 years old, leather jacket, smoking cigarettes, hanging out, emancipated, could do whatever it is that he wants to do, living upstairs in the Cunningham's garage. Everybody wanted to be Fonzie. Couldn't say I'm sorry to anybody, right? I think of Fonzie, you know, I wasn't around when Xenos started, but I think as an organization, Xenos was a lot like Fonzie when it started. Leather jacket, cigarettes, anti-authority. It was cool. You know, but what would happen to Fonzie if he never grew up? What happens to Fonzie at 50 when he's still living above the Cunningham's garage and hanging out at Al's Diner? It's not a pretty picture, Xenos. As an organization, we're a lot closer to 50 than we are to 19. And God's view of authority is important. We want to work with you. We want to be there for you. We want to help you. And Satan wants you on an island. We need each other. Moses, he had the Spirit of the Lord. He spoke to God face to face. He saw many miracles, but the burden of leadership was too great for him without help. Why should we think that we are any different? Moses' mission was impossible. Free the Jews from 400 years of slavery. Lead them across the desert for 40 years. And overtake the Canaanites. It was impossible, but it happened because of the power of the Lord and the will of God in his life. He was to see the fulfillment of God's promises to Abraham. And our mission, our work, our call from God is no less daunting. Infiltrate the kingdom of Satan. Seek and save those who are lost. Build together a body of Christ, a community of people who have a vision and a life that we live together, where we share and we grow and we communicate from oasis to finishing well. Our whole lives we can spend together spurring each other on to love and good deeds and seeing the will of God accomplished in our city and in our church and elsewhere around the world. That's our mission. And we can't do it without each other, Xenos. We can't. You need your co-leaders. You need your spouse. You need your sphere leaders. And rather than looking at one another with disdain, rather than blaming our field, rather than blaming the people that we're supposed to be leading, rather than blaming our leaders, let's come together and let's take advantage of the good things that God has given us. It's the person sitting next to you right now. And so think about this. If you're here and your home is not a source of spiritual vitality, I don't want you to think about whether your spouse is a millstone or a warrior princess. I want you to think about whether you're a millstone or a warrior princess. And maybe something's got to change. Maybe it's got to change right now. Maybe it's got to change this weekend. Maybe what you got to do is you got to get out on the golf course this afternoon with your spouse, walk around, and talk about how can we create an environment in our home that is a fortress for the purposes of the Lord? And how do you need to repent for the ways that you have fought with your spouse about things that really don't matter? And are you ready to create that environment for your family and for your children that will keep you in the fight? If you don't get regular time with your co-leader, all I can say is you're missing out. That is a provision for you. You need that. It is worth putting, you know, if your schedule's maxed out, put two of your disciples together and meet with them so that you can have time for your co-leader. It's worth making big sacrifices. If you've got to get up at 6:30 in the morning to get breakfast with your co-leader, it is worth it. And it's not going to be worth it in one meeting. It's not going to be worth it in a month of meetings. But if you do it on a regular basis, it will not take long until you understand what an essential part of your spiritual life it is to be connected in the yoke with another man, with another woman of God, looking at the same purpose, the same mission, and sharing the burden together. If you're hiding from your sphere coaches, if you're hoping just to keep your head down, maybe they'll go away. You know, maybe I can just operate over here and I don't really have to answer them. It's time to repent. They are God's provision for you. And they want to help you, and they want to see you grow, and they want to see you succeed, and they want to see you love being a home church leader. At the end of our story here in Numbers 11, the elders come like God called them to do. And they come to the tent of meeting, and the Spirit of the Lord comes upon them. And the elders prophesied. And all of a sudden, Joshua, the young guy, gets concerned. He's like, Moses, they're going to take over your role. He's worried about it. We read in 28, it says, Joshua, the son of Nun, the attendant of Moses from his youth, said, Moses, my Lord, restrain them. But Moses said to him, are you jealous for my sake? Would that all the Lord's people were prophets, that the Lord would put his spirit upon them. Then Moses returned to camp, both he and the elders of Israel. Moses went from seeing every person as his responsibility, feeling like every problem was his burden, and hating his role and wishing he could die, to believing and being able to carry out his call and his mission because he was sharing the burden of leadership with others. I encourage you, I implore you to do the same.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.